What's up, heroes? Welcome to episode 36. Today is part 2 of my mentoring session with producer Dojo Sensei Luke Rain, also known as Trap Jesus. If you missed part 1, make sure you go back and listen to episode 35, because we covered a lot of good stuff on his mixing process, and it'll help you to understand where this session picks up. This week, we talk about his thoughts on automation, the question he always asks of his sounds, and why mixing is like science.
And you just try the experiment over and over again. And, you know, not necessarily on the same track every time, but the more you do this.
But first, cue the intro music.
This is the Producer Life Podcast with your host, the House Ninja. Bringing you actionable ideas to improve your music and get it heard.
Before we jump into the recording, I want to explain the drop rack he mentioned several times. The drop rack is just an Ableton Live instrument that has a dry and wet side mapped to one knob. On the wet side are two plugins, Utility and EQ8. When passing a fully wet signal through the rack, it dips the width by 20% using the Utility plugin, and then using EQ8 it decreases volume by 3 decibels for the high and low frequencies. You could use this on your master track and then automate the wetness to increase right up to the drop, then make it completely dry. This makes your drop hit harder because you've lowered the volume and brought in the width immediately before. Okay, that said, let's jump into the session.
So then once I've got my entire drum track working together, now it's one thing instead of all of these things. Next, I add my subs. Once I have the subs, I kind of listen to the track and be like, okay, now what's the most important things in my song? And I will go order of importance, most important thing down the list. And then that's really helpful because you're adding, you know, okay, now I've got my subs under my drums. That's my whole rhythm track. Now, if these mid basses are acting more like subs, I'll probably bring them in first. You know, if they're the bass in a section, cool, I'll bring that in. And then I'll go over to the instruments and be like, okay, what in here is the most important thing? Like, it looks like the arps and the plucks are the main things. And this
the biggest one later in the track is that synth lead, the saw. But that doesn't come in until halfway through the track.
Yeah, so this one over here. So that might be something where you will want to, like, at that point, now that you've got the drum track built, switch over to this section where the saw is smacking and bring this saw in first, and then see what you've got to do to make the arps and the plucks fit around and with the saw, and then come back here and make sure they still sound good over here and balance that out.
Now, are you, so in terms of balancing, are you recording automation as you drag the faders up and down to bring certain parts of the track, or are you just, how do you usually work?
Usually my first thing is I will just set my levels, you know, like I've got, in Reason, I've got this gain knob up at the top, which is my pre-effects volume, and then this is my post effects volume, this fader at the bottom. So usually I'll leave the fader there first and I'll turn it down so it sounds about right relative to the rest of my mix, and then I'll bring up the EQ and I'll say, what parts of this sound do I not need? Like, okay, this sound, I don't need any of the sub information, so let me put a high pass. And, oh, there's some low mid muddiness here, so let me dip that. And, oh, you know, some harshness, so let me dip that from the high mids, et cetera, et cetera. Balance it out there and then kind of reset the volume a little bit, because obviously you take a bunch of frequency information away, that sound just got quieter, but now you just have a higher percentage of the frequencies you like. Maybe turn it back up a little bit and then start putting the effects I might want on it. You know what? This one needs some width, so I'm going to add some Haas effect to it. Or this one needs some distortion, so I'm going to put some distortion or saturation on it. And okay, cool. Now it's sounding better. This is how I want it. It's sounding really good on top of my drums. Let me reset the levels again. And then I'll move on to my second most important instrument. And as I'm bringing that one in, because I know it's less important than the first one, I've got to think of it relatively, like, I got to make sure it's not louder than the first one. I got to make sure it's not going in front of the first one. I got to make sure I'm carving holes out of it where that more important first one is already taking up all the space. And then I can really just dial it in. Like, so like, if we just look at this, even though you won't be able to hear it, be like, so I've got that one. I noticed that this is a little harsh. It's got a bunch of good frequency information in here, and it's got this high sizzle that's helping it sit on top of the mix. Dope. Then I'll listen to what's my second most important sound. You know, I've got this left and right pair, and then I've got this pluck down the middle. So I'm probably going to try this pluck first as an engineer. So let me turn it down there. Yeah, and I can see they're kind of working as a pair. They're doing the same thing. So then I would think, okay, how does this stack work out? Like, this sounds like this one doesn't need the high end as much because that one's got it. But then there's sections where it's playing where the high end isn't going to be covered up. So maybe I don't want to take it all away. Probably take a little bit of low end out, et cetera. You find like, okay, what in the stack, you know, is already covered by the instruments I've already brought in that I determined are more important. I'd be like, oh, these frequencies are already there. So as I bring this one in, is this clashing with or fighting the other sound at all? And how can I reshape it to, you know, to really make sure it fits with the more important sound? Then you sometimes get to an issue like I'm seeing I might have here where, well, I've got this layer that you say is the more important layer overall for this section, but then I've got this whole section and this whole section where I don't have that. So what I might do is chop that out right there, or I guess I'll chop it there. So this whole section with the pluck, I would just create a duplicate track of the same channel and do this, separate it out. So I've got this version of it I can EQ to sit and blend perfectly with the saw. And this section, I can make it blend perfectly by itself slash with these other plucks.
Okay. A lot of that I've been doing previously, like you were describing, all in one session and, you know, automating the EQ to handle that. But
yeah, I use automation more for like motion effects. Like the main automation I will do on almost every track is like automating a drop rack. So, you know, or a far away rack, or, you know, if I've got a, you know, I want to automate the dry wet knob on this to create some movement, or, you know, there's different things you can do for automation that are more like artistic. And I try to do less automation. I err on the side of less automation for my mixing. Like, I will never automate my faders, my volume faders, because I really don't like not being able to move them later. Like, those are my fine tuning. So I like to always keep those. Like, if I've got automation on my volume fader, then I've got to like delete my automation or reset the baseline of the automation and then rewrite the automation around that little, I just wanted to turn down the track a decibel.
Yeah. What I've been doing, cause I ran into that early on, and again, I may try it this way instead, but what I've been doing is I'll, in Ableton, there's something called a utility, which is just basically just a knob for the gain. And then, that, I mean, that's mostly what's in a utility. So I'll automate utility at the end of my channel. And then
yeah, way better idea. Good call.
Option of turning up and down the channel. But one of the other things I'm playing around with as I'm looking at the way you're doing it is so that I can visually tell which sections are louder or quieter. Is there any reason not to create a new clip and then change the clip's volume so you can see the clip getting larger or smaller so you can tell?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I do that all the time. I love changing clip. And that's one thing I love about stimming everything out. It can be like, oh, you know, this section, I just want this section to be louder. And this section, like, that's not really the focus. There's something else. I'm going to turn that one down. And that's a really good way. And like, I want the exact same EQ, the exact same reverb on these two. But then like for example, in this song, this section, all of a sudden we have a new sound that was never there before in the first, you know, few minutes of the mix. And I want to be able to put different EQ settings. Like maybe I want to filter out the top end of this one. And yeah, you could totally automate in a filter sweep, and filters are a great thing to automate. But sometimes it's just easier to do parallel processing where you're like, oh, I've got, instead of going to all the trouble of writing all this automation and trying to keep track of everything you're moving, you can just treat it as like a different version of this instrument. Like I'll do that a lot if I have the same instrument in a drop and then it's also in the breakdown. I'll just create a second track and all the versions of that instrument, the loops that are in the breakdown, I'll just move them to the other track, turn it down, add some filters, turn up the reverb, change the EQ settings, whatever. And then I don't have to think of like, oh, how am I changing this sound a bunch of times during the song? It's just, oh, this is this version of the sound, and this is a completely different version of the sound that is treated as separate tracks.
Okay.
But yeah, so to really, you know, to wrap up the mixing part of it, once you've got, you know, you get your instruments, again, you put the, once you get the entire set of instrument tracks all really working well together, you put that limiter on it, make sure the group is leveled, you know, then you've just got your instrument group that you make sure is leveled into the track, right, compared to your reference track and relative to your drums and bass, and then you tuck in your FX, you know, behind everything and make sure they're not being too obtrusive. That's something I used to do a lot, is like have like these, oh, this cool white noise riser, and it's like whoosh, and it's like, well, you know, it's like that's way less important than all the other elements. Maybe I'll like add a bunch of reverb to that track and turn it down and filter it out, so I'm getting the feeling subconsciously of this emotion of shh, but not actually like stepping on any of my other tracks with it. Then I have a pre-master chain that literally just has like these two are just my drop rack. And then this one is the exact same limiter again. And I'll limit this track. And then instead of going for that like -6, I'll let this one get a little closer to the top where I have it limited so that it's as loud as it can be going through my master chain.
Okay.
So we got 11 minutes left. I've gotten to take you through my entire mix process, and you've got a video of it, so you can duplicate this process. And I recommend just going through this process on as many songs as possible and just finishing drafts to turn into feedback, because like the, you know, it's quality through quantity, the repetition is what's really going to get you familiar and comfortable with this. Like, so I would suggest like building it for this song, doing your absolute best mix down that you know how to do today on this song, turn it in for feedback. And while you're waiting for feedback, go start grabbing some of your favorite compositions that you know the mix could be better on, stemming them out and running them through this process. Because the more you do it, the more you're just going to get familiar and comfortable and faster with this process. And I've just been like, this has been my main thing this year, is just running as everything I can through my new mixing template that I made last year. And you know, this, the template evolves a little, I get a new plugin that goes in and replaces something, you know, I used to use. And and I realized, oh, actually the way I've been doing this was causing this problem, and if I just stop that problem before it starts, and I'll have to fix it later, etc. Your process and your it'll get faster, it'll get more refined.
I'm a little scared just because I feel like this track is getting close. I'm a little worried about ruining it, but I'll give it a
that's
try.
That's why you keep this session you have mm-hmm. as it is. Stem it out like you already did. You already have the stems you sent me. And build this section and drop it into a new section. Like that's something I had to get over, that I encourage everybody else to get over. Like the mix isn't this like amazing monolithic thing that you can't fuck up. The mix is a linear process that goes from start to finish to get a draft done. And there's been a bunch of times where I like lost plugins, or I, you know, lost a mix session, or I messed something up or whatever, and I had to start over, and I was so bummed about having to start over, like all that work. But then the second time I went back and did it, it was way faster and it turned out way better. And I'm starting to realize that, like, I heard this story, this track Beat It got mixed like fucking 50 times or something. And then they like had all these different mixes. Back in the day, they didn't have these digital sessions. It was literally, you had to get all the reel-to-reel tapes, plug them onto the machines, set the entire huge mixing board up, go through and mix every track in one session and print it to another tape.
Wow.
And then they just had 50 tapes and they just got to pick their best mix, whichever one they liked the best. And everyone, they tried a little bit of different stuff. Like, what if on this mix, like, the guitars are a little louder and the bass is a little quieter? What if on this mix we make the drums a little louder and the fucking instruments a little quieter? You know, like, what's the best way? And then they got to pick one. The funny thing is, apparently I heard the second mix that they did ended up being the one they chose. But they're like, this is a Michael Jackson song with Slash on the guitars, and god damn it, we are going, or maybe it wasn't Slash, maybe it was Eddie Van Halen or something, somebody crazy on the guitars, like, we got to make sure we get this dialed, so let's just do it a bunch of us, hire an incredible mixing engineer, and let's just have him do it over and over and over. And so remember, this is a process. You're not going to mess up the song because you have the stems, you have the original session as a reference, and you know, this process kind of make it scientific. You know, it's the scientific process. You know, good science is, I'm going to, you know, see, I'm going to, like, your hypothesis is I can get it to sound like this reference track. And you just try the experiment over and over again. And, you know, not necessarily on the same track every time, but the more you do this, like, and remember, every time you use this, you're going to get a little bit better at it. Your ear is going to get a little bit better. You're going to realize things after doing this like 10 times. So you're like, oh, that's what I've been hearing. Or, oh, I didn't hear that before. But now that I've been seeing it visually and hearing it, then I finally like, oh, I need to dip that from my kicks. Oh, okay. I get it now. And so that's why I suggest that you get this template, drop everything into your template, and run this track through it to the best of your today abilities with the, your
and when
current
they get
level
this template,
ears.
You mean build a template like that?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah. Build yourself a mixing template. You know, you can just grab the Skrillex mixing bus template and use it like Dylan does in the summit videos that we did, that Dojo Summit. Matter, or I guess a Hexus now, did a really dope, you know, 10-minute version where he shows you a slightly different way that's probably a little closer to my version, where instead of using the synths, he's doing it on groups. So I suggest you watch both those videos and make, you know, choose a process that makes the most sense to you and move forward with it. And then just start, run this one through it and turn it in for feedback and forget it exists until you get that feedback back. And in the meantime, stem out a few other tracks and just start running them through and go through this process I've showed you. Start with the kick, match the rest of the meat drums to it, limit. Start, then bring in your percussions one by one, match them to the snare and to each other, limit it. Bring the drum track together, limit it. Add in the basses, limit it. Add in the instruments, limit it. Bring in the FX, limit it. Bring them all together in the pre-master bus, limit it. If you have vocals, as you can see, the vocals are a totally separate thing that gets summed to the pre-master and in the master. That is so that the vocals aren't getting kind of squashed in with all the beat, and they're not getting sidechained with the beat, and they're not getting far away racked with the beat. I think that's a good, but there's no vocals on this track anyways, correct?
So no, I was curious if you think this track will stand up on its own, or do I need to try to find a vocal or hire a vocalist to do a top line for it?
I'm not sure, man. I'll leave that up to your artistic, and a lot of the times, like, we think a track needs more stuff, but then you take it through the mixing process and you realize we actually had a little too much stuff. Now that everything's cleaner, it sounds great. You know, like, that's one thing I've really noticed too, is like, a lot of the times I'll get down to the, like I said, start with the most important lead instruments and stuff first and go down the list. Sometimes I'll get down to those last few tracks I wrote and realize, oh, I don't actually need these instruments. I was like, when everything was unmixed and it was unsatisfying, I was trying to add more in the composition phase. And then I get down to the bottom of that and realize, oh, like these last couple of pads are pretty unnecessary now that all the other instruments sound incredible and are EQ'd correctly. Okay. And then one last thing I just want to let you know is we talk about the five phases. You know, first you create the loops, then you do the arrangement, then you do all the, you know, make sure you've got all the transitions and phase three stuff, then you do the mix, then you do the master. That's a linear process to teach it to people, but in practice, it doesn't have to be that, you know, in that order all the time. Like, for example, sometimes I'll make a super loop, then I'll mix it and master it. Like, I'll stem out my super loop, drop it into my mixing template, mix it and master it, and then go back and do the arrangement, turn it in for feedback, and then through rounds of feedback, do all the phase three.
Hmm. Okay.
So sometimes I find that getting to the mixing and mastering stages earlier really helps because you get to really hear what all of your sounds are doing and how they're interacting in a real mix environment, as opposed to kind of as just the composition hodgepodge. I like, you know, it's like, it's sometimes it can just feel like a pile of sounds that I'm sifting through. And it's so helpful just to be like, you know what? I've got a bunch of good sounds. They work pretty well together. Let me just, you know, maybe it's just a super loop. Maybe it's a simple arrangement. Maybe I've done a little bit of transitional work. Wherever it is, when my first burst of creativity starts to slow down, stem it out, throw it in, because you can always in the mixing session, oh, you know what? I want to add one more serum patch. Or you know what? Let me add another white noise riser. Or you know what? Let me do some more phase three, chopping up the waves, do a little reverse, do a stutter edit. Like all of that is possible after you've mastered the track. And once you've mixed and mastered the track, you have such a good understanding of the sonics of it that it's really easy to hear the places where you do need to definitely do more work and definitely don't.
Okay. That Seth Drake class that you were pulling from, that's not available just in the main dojo section, correct? That's an add-on you have to purchase, is it?
Yeah, he's got his own website. It's The Approach by Seth Drake. It's okay. Really dope. But you'll get a lot. Like he did a weekly download that kind of ended up inspiring that whole class because he blew Dylan's mind so hard with what he was talking about just in that hour and a half that, so I recommend going back and watching that as well, because that's just, man, it explains a lot of these concepts I went over in more depth, like connecting the dots, finding what he calls the nugget, which is, you know, the most important sounds that you want to mix in together first, make sure they sound like, so, you know, kick, snare, sub, lead, maybe the hats, you know, like those five things. If you dropped into that, you'd be like, man, that's a drop. And then there's like 14 other sounds also playing in there, but they're like little turnarounds, little background stuff, and little extra percussions that if they weren't there, but these five were absolutely killer and undeniable, it would still be your song and it would still be good and it would still hit on a dance floor.
Thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I will get something back to you in the next week or two. Were you still cool if I use bits of this audio for my podcast?
Yeah, for sure, man.
Okay, awesome.
Yeah, go for it. Hi, podcast listeners. Make sure to subscribe.
Make sure to check out the Human Music Podcast too.
Oh, hey, thank you for that.
Awesome. Thanks, Luke. All right. A good week.
Peace, buddy.
Here's some of my key takeaways from this week's session. First, when you're mixing each sound, always ask, what do I not need? This leads you naturally to subtractive EQing. Remember the EQing rule of thumb that you should generally subtract rather than add. After you've removed frequencies, don't forget to turn the volume back up a little bit to compensate. Second, think about your sounds relative to one another. What's the most important sound? Are your sounds clashing? How do I make them fit? Do I need a different set of EQ curves in different sections of the song? If you do, he recommends duplicating the track to help you keep the different EQ curves separate rather than trying to automate the EQ throughout the track. Third, generally he likes to use automation for effects, like reverb. He tries to avoid automation for mixing the volume. One possible way to work is to raise clip volumes for sections of the track that need to be louder. That has the advantage of letting you actually see the waveforms get bigger, so you can visually identify areas that are larger, that are louder on one particular track. Fourth, the Producer Dojo teaches a five-phase process for writing music. You start with a super loop of 8 bars and a bunch of tracks of sounds that work well together. Next, you arrange those sounds over the composition, perhaps following a commercially successful reference track and its layout. After that, you focus on transitions, which is where a lot of the emotional impact of a song occurs. Fourth, you mix it, which is what Luke was talking about in this episode and the last one. And finally, in step 5, you master it. While this process sounds linear, Luke points out that sometimes it's helpful to jump ahead in the process. Mix and master your 8-bar loop, for example, and then submit that to someone for feedback before you move on. So, thanks a lot for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with a friend. As a reminder, Trap Jesus is also one of the hosts on the Human Music podcast, so make sure you check that out. I'll have a link in the podcast show notes. Until next week, this is the House Ninja reminding you to be somebody's hero today.